Do you think those tickets in December are actually going to happen?
You're listening to Dots, Lines, and Destinations, a travel podcast with hosts Stephen Seagraves, Foz Mamoon, and Seth Miller.
Hello, and welcome to episode 291 of Dots, Lines, and Destinations. I'm Stephen Seagraves, joined by Seth Miller and Foz Mamoon. Gentlemen from the quarantine bunkers, how are you doing?
Still grounded.
Yeah. Seth's is more of a
quarantine in the attic.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say.
So you're in the tower. You're not really in the bunker.
Yeah.
Do you have Tourette's up there with a gun?
I do randomly decide to curse. Does that, for no apparent reason, just scream out obscenities? Is that what you mean? Or,
you know, that would count more if you were in the Vermont side, not the New Hampshire side.
Oh, man. How are you guys making out during all this? Still chugging along?
Doing the best we can.
Yeah. Yeah.
I broke my ADS-B receiver today, so, you know, that's the level I've gotten to.
It's a good Tuesday.
I thought I was fixing things.
Is it working?
I think I may need to reclaim it, and it's going to give me a new code or something. I don't know.
A new ID, yeah.
Yeah.
Fun times.
See, I feel like back when I was broke and I was looking at aspirational trips, that's what I feel like now. I look at trips I'd like to book, and then I don't.
Because you can't.
I mean, I could, but I know I'm not going to get to go.
I realized that, you know, I have this Vietnam ticket on Cathay that's still open. But you know, now it's in June. It's not going to happen anymore because it doesn't look like Hong Kong's going to open up the border. But at the same time, my visa expires for Vietnam in September. It'll be a full year.
Did you get a multi-entry?
Yeah, I did. Because I knew I was going back.
Well, I guess you're going to have to get another visa.
Yeah, I'll just do the visa on arrival at this point.
Or you just ask them to drop the last leg.
That's true. I could do that.
Right? My visa expired. Can you just get me to Hong Kong?
Yeah, I could see if they do that. They might be willing to. Cathay has been really good during all this. So.
Unlike United.
Yeah. So we have a couple of listener questions. We'll go with Tom Schindler's first. He was thinking that mileage bookings on United Metal should count for million mileage status. What do you guys think of that?
Yes.
No.
Foz is like, keep them away. I mean, how many reward flights are you taking on United Metal, Foz?
None, if I can avoid it.
My only reason for it is a practical one. The goal is to, in theory, reward travel on United. And I think the total number of miles anybody is going to redeem as award points versus, you know, cash tickets is relatively trivial. But especially with the airline trying to keep more people on local metal for cost reasons, why not? Like, is it really going to move the needle on how many people bump up in million miler status? And if not, does it not show like a nice little give back to the consumers?
Yeah.
The problem is, it's not that hard to program it, but they don't give points for it, and so they'd have to figure out a new way to sort of code that into the system.
That's
easy to do now because your status is no longer earned by miles anyway, so you just credit the miles. The only thing that'll increment is the million mile counter.
Well, you'd have to take out the award mile piece.
Yeah.
Right, because it credits, you wouldn't get award.
Because it'd be a $0 ticket, I think is what costs the thing, so that would credit anyways.
Yeah, that's a good point.
$0 coupon.
Would you credit just butt and seat then, like distance alone? Yeah. Yeah.
Same as cash ticket, right? There's no more class of service bonus for million milers there.
No. Not since the merger.
I mean, I think it would be a nice thing for United to do. Can I see them doing it? Probably not, based on the way things are going. Maybe.
They've had years and years. I guess my only other thought there is they've had years and years and obviously never did it, but this seems to be a good opportunity as they're doing other things like, you know, raising all the award price, partner awards 10% and removing award charts and things like that. It seems like an easy little give back.
Yeah. I don't really have a problem with it. The only reason I have a problem with this is because then I'd have a harder time burning my miles on non-United metal. Right now, that's the one time I feel safe flying someone other than United because I know I'm not missing out on anything.
Emotionally, you'd have that problem.
Exactly. But I mean, the reality is what does it really buy you, right? How many people are burning on United and how many miles are you going to earn for 20,000 points, right? If you're booking a 20,000, 25,000 mile ticket, you're only going to earn a couple thousand at best.
Well, I mean, I think Foz, like, would you start booking trips to Singapore and Sydney with miles if on United Metal, if this worked? Because he would get to 4 million miler a lot faster.
No, because it's going to cost me like 400,000 miles.
but you can't hoard them. You can't take them with you, Fuzz.
I know I can't take them with me, but 400,000 miles is still a lot of miles for a $1,500 ticket.
That's true. That's true. Oh, man. Yeah. Any other thoughts on that for our listeners? No? Andrew Young had actually mentioned this. We talked about Andrew's question on the last show, and we actually got the question wrong. Oops. Sorry, Andrew. He was actually asking us, there's a theory out there, and there's evidence out there that suggests that Mahan Air, the Iranian airline, defied a ban on passenger flights between Tehran and Wuhan, and that in turn had a spike created a spike in cases in Iran. Did you guys read this story on Foreign Policy? It's pretty damning. It seems like the Iran Civil Aviation Organization was part of it, right? So,
I mean, I guess. Was there an international ban on flights to Wuhan? That's what I don't understand. If the Iranian government permitted it, why is this such a big deal? Right, they chose to let that happen. I mean, there were plenty of flights pulling people out, right? Non-residents of China repatriating people. Those flights were running. So it could easily be flagged as that.
Well, on January 31st, the Iranian government said that all flights were suspended to and from China. But there were departure information and arrival information out of Khomeini Airport, Tehran's airport, and by Chinese airports shows that flights by Mahan Air continued for another full week, including one direct evacuation flight from Wuhan.
So how does someone publicly file a flight plan with the government and then 2 months later, 3 months later, 4 months later, it's an issue?
Well, I think that's why the Civil Aviation Organization is being kind of called out, because they allowed it.
Oh, okay. So it's not the airline that they're going after.
It's both, because they said Mahan Air shouldn't have flown it regardless.
Well, maybe their refund was stuck in a queue somewhere.
So
the flight cancellation memo got stuck?
Yeah.
Refunds?
It was in share somewhere.
Yeah, and because like February 20th, Mahan Air claimed that they had only flown cargo flights providing humanitarian assistance to China, while all passenger flights had been grounded. But the tracker data shows that there were passenger flights.
But, I mean, could it be like the United flights, where they are cargo flights but running with passenger numbers?
I'm not sure. I think that's hard to tell. It looked like they were regular flight numbers, I guess.
Yeah, but we've seen other carriers run regular flight numbers, but there are no passengers.
Yeah, it could be.
Also, doesn't China do weird things with flight numbers for authorizations? I know they have weird rules about aircraft registrations.
I don't know.
Right, like the individual aircraft has to be certified for China, right? There's an Air New Zealand, I think, thing a couple months/years ago where it made it like halfway and then turned around and came back because it was a new plane and they hadn't filed the paperwork and they had to switch the passengers to an older plane that had already had the paperwork.
I do remember that, yeah.
I don't know if the flight numbers, but just China's super weird about all the registrations and stuff, so it wouldn't surprise me entirely.
Any thoughts on this, Seth? Do you think like there's going to be actual repercussions? I mean, Mahan Air is part of the Iranian guard. So
do I think there's going to be repercussions? No.
Just no one's going to say
anything. Who's going to, what, they, like, Mahan Air is all of a sudden going to be blacklisted by Europe? Oh, wait. Like, did they break the rules? Probably. Does it matter? I mean, depends on your definition of matter, but nothing's going to come of it is my guess.
Gotcha.
What do we think of United's new scissor hub in Guam?
It's interesting. Serving Chengdu and Tokyo?
They're putting Chengdu flights through Guam?
Taipei, Shanghai? I haven't seen Chengdu, but maybe there might be.
Oh, actually, sorry. I just looked. They were doing Narita Chengdu.
Yeah, they were doing Narita Chengdu. Yeah, but they're from Guam. They're doing LA, San Francisco, Shanghai, and Taipei.
Wait, what? I haven't seen this yet.
Oh, yeah. If you go look up, over the last few days, they've been running 77Ws from LA and San Francisco to Guam, and then from there to Taipei and Shanghai.
That's got to be cargo, not passenger, obviously.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, that should explain why they didn't announce it. I guess better to keep the planes where you've got crew base, it's U.S. territory. I mean, this could be an indicator they're getting a little sketched out around Tokyo or Hong Kong, where they were doing some connections.
I mean, the thing that surprised me about Tokyo is they're still going to Narita, not Haneda at this point.
For cargo, that makes sense.
Does it? I mean, Haneda is still much larger, right? If it's just picking up cargo there or going onward somewhere else.
I think most of the cargo carriers, though, are at Narita.
Yeah, I was going to say, for interline movements and also just where their crew, they still had previously more options and facilities for crew base and whatnot out at Narita.
But I'm guessing they're not interlining with other cargo carriers.
You never know.
Fair.
But even if not interline, just bulk loaders and the lifts and stuff. Like, I would assume that stuff. And I also wouldn't be surprised to learn that the Japanese government would prefer the cargo flights stay at Narita.
Yeah.
That's fair.
Because, I mean, Narita does have that entire cargo area on the south side of the airport, and they have another one, like, up north on the north side. So, I mean, it's like the Narita, the cargo hub. So, anyway, I had another story here I wanted to talk about. Avianca bankruptcy.
But Seth, not Life Miles.
But not Life Miles.
Seth, you wrote about this.
Chapter 11. Yay. It's a weird one because it's a Colombian airline that may have Panamanian corporate papers and an American holding company, and it's traded on the New York Stock Exchange. So, yay. They filed for reorganization protection in New York on Sunday. On Tuesday, they actually had their quote-unquote day one hearing in front of the court, and issued a release saying, or the president or the CEO, Enco van der Werf, saying, "We are very pleased with the prompt approval by the court of our first day motions related to employees, customers, travel agency partners, and suppliers, among others. An important and positive step forward in our reorganization and supports Avianca continuing to operate through this process," end quote. They're trying to do a pretty quick sort of reorg, use this to get out of some leases and a few other obligations, but generally speaking, hoping to continue operations. And as Foz notes, Life Miles is a separate company.
And they've taken, Avianca itself has taken quite a bit of money from United, right?
Yeah, United wrote off $1 billion in losses.
Wow. Oops.
$700 million cash investment, I think, at one point they were supposed to. And so that's the other weird part is United fed the investment to buy out Abramovich, mm-hmm. Efromovich, something like that. You think I'd remember since I just wrote it. He rescued them out of bankruptcy. He's a Bolivian national who rescued them out of bankruptcy sort of in 2003 and helped fund the recovery and then leveraged it with a shit ton of debt to finance Avianca Brazil and some of his other crazy, schemes. All of those things started to collapse and was putting the core company at risk. United came in, essentially put up the cash to stabilize it and was hoping to start a joint venture between Avianca, Copa, and United through the Americas and a whole bunch of other things. And, you know, I guess the joint venture theoretically could still happen if the airline is still in business, but yeah. A lot going on there.
Wow.
Yeah. Yay.
They're also getting rid of their local operation in Peru. Correct?
Yeah. Yeah. So they're shutting down Peru. The other thing I was going to say about it is like, this is one of many bankruptcies. Virgin Australia is the obvious or very obvious other big name that we've seen so far recently. Miami Air, which is a smaller charter operator in the States, actually liquidated, or I should say liquidated. They are still working through the process, but terminated all of their employees. So, which is really sad. They are actually a great charter operation. I got to fly them once. That was fun.
Did they do some of the Cuban charters?
They did some of those, but they also had, so they had a sort of executive configuration, like 60 seaters, 737-800s, all business class that were working on, they did some sports charters and corporate. The one I did was a corporate charter to Cayenne, French Guiana for a rocket launch.
Oh, cool.
But also they, you know, had regular sort of 180 seat configs that they use for repatriation flights and other types of things and the Cuba flights and stuff like that. So a super broad range of things they did, but they've been running for almost 30 years now. In that market. And just like they're a good, solid operation. They really were sort of one of the good guys in a lot of ways.
Yeah. You know, I was asking before the show, what do you guys think about U.S. carriers or just carriers in general? We know Virgin Australia is on the brink. What about American, you know, U.S. carriers, world carriers? What do you guys think? Who's next?
Well, I mean, there's also South African, which is pretty much just about dead. Yeah. I think Virgin Atlantic's of the European carriers will be next.
Do you think they do full like Chapter 11 or you think they liquidate? Completely.
I think they'll end up liquidating. I think they'll try for Chapter 11, but they'll end up liquidating.
Mm. And who picks up the pieces? Delta?
No one.
I mean, I guess, well, maybe, who knows, right? Like, if there's no obligation to use the slots, then someone might buy the slots. But if there's a requirement to use the slots, I can't imagine anyone's going to really pick them up.
So the slots right now have a waiver through the summer.
But so would that hold true if they if the company folds and someone's buying them? Does that waiver continue for them?
Yeah,
because then people would go that you know there would be more competition for it than if there's an obligation to use them.
I understand. I believe that the slot usage is just general.
Okay.
You know, it doesn't matter who's owning them or holding them, and they are still the asset as long as the company is seen as sufficiently functional to hold the slots.
Then BA would probably buy the slots.
I think they'd have trouble with getting them just based on where authorities last week were going to force them to divest because of American, only a couple, but we're already going to force that divestiture at Heathrow or Gatwick. So,
sure, we'll give up all our Gatwick slots.
No, I mean, Willie Walsh came out and said that he likes Gatwick a lot better because they're easier to work with and cheaper to operate at. It's pretty funny.
What would happen? I mean, is there anyone else that would be in the market for Heathrow slots? Like, is there anyone that needs access that doesn't have access today?
Everyone.
We could buy one.
Do you have a plane?
Well, we keep talking about buying a plane with all of them getting parked, so you might as well start service in London.
Oh, man. I'm just trying to figure out, like,
JetBlue obviously wants some, but
yeah, that's what I was going to say. It's like JetBlue I can think of, but I was just trying to think if there's anybody else.
If they go on the market, and it's not that many. If they go on the market, people will come looking for them. It is worth noting that Virgin Atlantic released its summer 2021 schedule plans today. Highly optimistic statement. there. They're going to go double daily to Tel Aviv. It's very exciting.
Wow.
Yeah, that was an interesting move. I don't quite get that, although I guess you gotta start planning to sell the tickets again at some point.
Well, not only did they announce their summer schedule, they also announced that they'll start selling tickets for them in the next few days.
Right.
So it's just like, okay. Just, I guess it's a long-term cash grab.
Grab some cash even if you don't know that you're gonna actually operate the routes?
Sure. Let the government figure it out.
Oh, man.
I gotta wonder what the credit card holdback situation is for them right now.
Yeah. What do you guys think about U.S. carriers? Anybody that you're worried about?
I think AA is probably going to be the first to go of the big three. Spirit, probably, I'd say, is on the top of that list.
Spirit, okay. Not Sun Country or anybody like that?
Sun Country has that waiver right now, so I think they're in a decent position.
They all have the varying levels of waiver. Sun Country is very low in operations right now because of it and has the Amazon cargo contract.
Mm.
So they're flying some 73s for cargo with Amazon. I don't know. Spirit's a tough one for me. They are probably a little expense heavy without. I mean, all right, they're low cost carrier. They keep expenses low, this and that. But they are burning cash at a decent clip. I don't know. I think that it'll be interesting to see how well they can get that cash burned down.
I mean, I can't really think Spirit and Southwest are probably more exposed than some of the majors simply because they have dense seating, right? Because it's all coach. So, you know, and that's their packing the planes is their business model.
Yeah.
So you're taking the theory that no one's going to fly if they can't have a middle seat empty?
I think that's going to be the case for a while. I definitely think until there's a lot of misinformation and there's a lot of uncertainty right now. Even with antibody tests, who knows if they're really, you know, how accurate those are and how effective the antibodies are. Right? We're all in a world of unknown right now.
You sound like the CEO of Allegiant on the call today. I think it was the CEO. One of their executives was saying, you know, there's no facts. It's just a lot of people into individual opinions driving all these decisions, which scares the bejesus out of me.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, there's also Frontier, right? That runs on a very dense config as a low cost carrier. Are they less exposed or do you think they do okay during all this?
Definitely. I think definitely exposed. It's hard to tell what their numbers look like though, because they're a private company.
Mm, yeah. So they haven't had to release any quarterly numbers or anything.
One of the interesting things that also happened this week, the DOT updated the CARES Act guidance again and said now small airlines can drop 5 additional routes or destinations, and the big carriers, the big three, can drop 11. It's based on 5% of their total cities that they serve. But it's interesting. It's, you know, I think what it basically comes down to is the DOT doesn't want to get involved with deciding individual cities anymore.
Yeah.
And got really pissed at being called out for with the comment, I think it was in the JetBlue filing, most recent JetBlue filing, where they asked to drop their small cities out west. That was basically like, said something to the effect of, we say it's bad for the business. The local municipalities say it's bad for the business. Like, the airport says it's bad for business. No one wants us to run this flight except you. How do you get to decide that this is still necessary?
So they didn't like that.
Why, it's like, why does the DOT think its judgment is better than all of these people who are, you know, very much hands-on with it? And, yeah, it's bad.
You think someone at the DOT got their hand slapped for going out of their comfort area? And they were told, you know, just make it a general number and we'll have the airlines figure out which cities they want to fly to?
Probably. I mean, or there's someone got the, like, okay, enough of, like, you know, trying to pull all the strings. Let's just get it done.
Mm, yeah. Yeah. So Foz mentioned American. What do you think about that, Seth?
I think that the airlines, as part of the CARES Act stuff, all had to get their loyalty programs assessed in value as potential collateral for loans. And they're all really, really high numbers. And so that may end up being the answer that solves that problem, so to speak. But their cash burn is very high. There's no doubt.
And Foz, what are your, like, why are you thinking American would be the first? Is it anything in particular?
Well, they went into this whole thing with the weakest stock, right? So they were already not necessarily undervalued, but investors had very little confidence in their long-term viability. And they have the biggest expenses because they went on a free-for-all giving everyone money when they were trying to negotiate the merger.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that makes sense. I wonder, you know, I feel like Delta is probably the strongest of the three majors in the U.S., United in a second place. I feel like they're burning a ton of cash. I mean, they all are, but
don't underestimate Delta, though, right? Think of all the foreign investments they've made. They have a lot of money at risk right now.
Yeah, true. That's a good point. I shared a tweet with you guys. Someone said, you know, the airlines aren't doing their best to distance people, and so that they should just get, you know, all go bankrupt. I think it's a terrible idea, right? Have, you know, and someone suggested that Southwest could buy up Alaska and JetBlue.
the question that I pose in this day and age, where air travel is basically a necessity for most people, does it make sense to be re-regulated?
I'm looking at your image, Seth, on my screen.
No, absolutely.
Why not? I mean, what's the argument against it? What's the negative?
To re-regulation? That the free market, or vaguely free open market, whatever you want to call it, has delivered sufficient competition still. I mean, Listen, do I wish that we still had 10 airlines instead of 6 or 20 airlines instead of 10? I guess so. I mean, but I'm not, I'm not so hung up on it. I don't think that the lack of regulation has created a situation where the airlines are truly abusing any of the rules. I mean, we can talk about the refund stuff. We can talk about some of the policies in terms of ancillary fees and things. But I think on the balance, most airports have multiple airlines serving them. Like, the number of places where it's just a single choice and you're stuck with it is very, very low. So I don't think it's that demanding.
You don't think the excessive reliance on joint ventures to basically monopolize major portions of the global market is a big issue? I mean, at this point, we really only have 3 carriers across the Atlantic, even though by name there's 20. And they're all coordinating, whether we like it or not. That's the reality of it. There's no competition.
That coordination is regulated. Like, what you're talking about adding regulation, and those have to be approved. Those would be whatever happens in, you know, whatever the DOT is doing already is how those whatever new things you're talking about would be operated, I would have to assume.
Well, they've been very lax about it, right? Because the airlines have been able to dictate their own terms for the most part. But, I mean, from a consumer perspective, it's been a downward spiral for the last 5 years. All in the name of shareholder equity.
I'm not as convinced of that as you are, I think, is the short answer.
That's fair.
Again, back to the, do you need 10 competitors? I don't know. Is that always better? I think that there is something to be said for having airlines that only go bankrupt every 20 years, not every 2.
Yeah.
I'll tell you notwithstanding. I don't know.
I mean, I think that's the beauty of this, though, is that we don't have to agree, right? Like, it's like we can have different opinions on, I think, yeah, the right way is. So.
And often we don't.
Yeah. I was going to see what else we had. So Emirates has decided to delay retrofitting their fleet with premium economy. And then they are also not going to make upgrades to the older jets.
So the premium economy was supposed to launch on the sort of last tranche of 380s.
Yep.
And those aren't coming quite as quickly. They're trying to delay those deliveries. That's actually almost in some ways the more interesting part to me in terms of like, how are they going to manage to delay those with Airbus? Because it's not like Airbus can slot them in for someone else. Mm. Is Airbus going to park, you know, 8 white tails somewhere? Giant white, just build them anyways and park them until they can fit them out and deliver them. There's some interesting.
It's like a logistics question of how do you keep these jets from being delivered?
Because you can't really slow production anymore. It's running about as slow as it can, and you can't deliver them to someone else, right? You can't like swap delivery slot positions because there's no one else wants them. So
it's interesting. Bit of a problem.
Yeah, but yeah, apparently they want to delay, and through all of this they've said that they're going to delay the premium economy rollout, and in order to save cash, part of that was going to involve an interiors retrofit on older planes. So for now, 737s and 777, 777-300s, ERs and the A380s, neither are going to get those interior refits yet. So, which is too bad, because the rumored but not confirmed product that it was going to be looks pretty nice.
Yeah. Yeah, it does. Actually, it looks actually really nice. So I read a story in Forbes. It's called The Future of Air Travel, 4-Hour Process, Self-Check-In, Disinfection, and Immunity Passes. And it's by Cecilia Rodriguez. And she kind of talks about what the future will look like for airline travel. I don't know that I agree with her. I mean, part of it, she says, you know, it's going to take 4 hours now to check in. And you're going to have to, you know, ensure that you're healthy. And boarding is going to be, you know, they're going to spray the seats with electrostatic spray and personal protective gear and masks for everybody. And then food, they're probably going to stop serving it altogether in short-haul flights and light refreshments for long-haul flights. And then arrival, you know, some places may have you fill out you have to have a card that says you're healthy or some kind of screening. My question for you guys is, do you think this is realistic long term? And, you know, do you really think it's going to be a 4-hour check-in process? And that the hope, I mean, I've read stories of people traveling today and it doesn't seem to be that bad.
I don't think that it's accurate, but I also don't think we have all the data on what it'll be like.
Hmm. What do you think? What were you going to say, Seth?
No, I think no, pretty much across all of it.
Because at the end of the day, right, it's in the airline's best interest to get people in and out faster. And, you know, and so if it's a 4-hour process, people are going to get detracted. More people get, say, I'm going to take a train or I'm going to fly. Or not fly, I'm going to drive. Now, I fully expect United to find some way that OTG can process tests for you at the airport.
Get your antibody test right here while you wait for your flight.
We'll only charge you 10 times the cost, but we'll sell you booze at the same time.
And you can use your miles to buy the test.
And every third person who has the credit card will get it for free. Here's the thing. Do I think that we're going to have some sort of health, you know, is it going to be the old WHO yellow vaccination card? Maybe, maybe not. Is it going to be something like that? Maybe. Do we need to? So it depends on if there's an actual vaccine, right? If you're doing antibody testing to try to let people on planes, I think it's going to have to be something that's basically an instant saliva swab, nothing with real blood. Like, and so a lot of these things are going to evolve. But I don't think the logistics of all of that testing and whatnot is going to work just based on what the industry needs to survive.
Yeah,
right? Like the industry, it's the same as you can't block middle seats forever because the industry won't support that. It's just not going to happen. And so also part of this is a perhaps foolish assumption on my part, but I am assuming that eventually there will be some sort of medical advancements that get this vaguely under control. So, you know, how that truly plays out, I don't know, but I feel like we're going to have things be all sorts of weird for some period of time, but no airline's going to be able to block the middle seat forever. no airlines are, there's a good chance we don't enforce masks forever. Just other things, like people are going to have to eat on planes. You can't not serve food on an 18-hour flight or a 12-hour flight even. And, you know, it just, there's a lot of those little things that start to add up, to say nothing of, it's actually probably safer on the airplane than in the airport. And so having people sit together facing each other in chairs at the airport for extended periods of time is a far riskier proposition than sitting on the plane.
Yeah. I was thinking about, you know, there's this whole, you know, part of the experience of flying and, you know, being in an airport, right? You're at risk there, and then you're probably less risk in, you know, in on the plane itself. But then I think about airports in Europe where the use of buses is fairly heavy, right, to transport you. Like, how do you socially, you're gonna have to have more buses. That's already kind of a mess when you look at like places like Zurich, where most of the little hoppers are by bus. You have to get out there by bus, and you're stuffed in there like a sardine, and it can take you 30 minutes just to get to the plane.
I think part of that problem is going to go away because so many flights are going to drop off for a while.
Mm.
Right? That's a density problem. They don't have enough gates.
Gotcha. Yeah.
Right. And so now we don't expect to, I don't think anyone can realistically expect that we will be at pre-COVID levels anytime in the next 4 to 5 years.
Yeah. I mean, I guess I look at Ryanair or EasyJet, and they use buses as well because it's cheaper than using the gates. So even if there's fewer people, you still have a bus full of people. So there's like all this logistic stuff you have to figure out.
Much easier. They'll just catapult you from the terminal to the airport. One at a time.
Yeah. Hope you land at the top of the stairs.
Yeah. They'll inflate the slide for you over there so you land on the slide.
Yeah, yeah. It's a flight within a flight, you know.
Exactly. I actually think I'm not so adverse to medical checks and things as I think back, right? If you think about how lax air travel has been over the last 20 years, I've seen some people who are deathly ill who probably shouldn't be flying, but they still insist on flying. And if we can keep those people off the planes, that's probably not a bad thing.
Yeah. All I hope that comes out of this is people wash their hands. That's really all I want.
Yeah, Foz, to your point about people not, you know, shouldn't be flying if they're sick, whatever. The one thing I will throw out there is there's the temperature screening push, and you know, Frontier is going to do it, Air Canada is going to do it. All passengers everywhere touchless thermal scans to get on board, and if your fever's over 100 or something, you don't get to fly. And on the one hand, yes, that's probably healthier for everybody. On the other hand, that's not a good indicator necessarily of coronavirus versus like you just might have a cold or something else. And I don't know. I wonder if that's really the right thing to do.
No, I'm not saying fever is the right measurement, right? But if we do a better job of doing proper screening, right, there's any number of, you know, give them some of the old continental cheese soup. If they don't barf, don't let them on. They clearly have lost their taste.
Yeah,
I feel like it's interesting to me that, you know, fever is a good example, Seth. If I got sick in Canada, right, and I had the flu, just the flu, and they said, "Oh, you can't travel home," that would be like the worst thing for me, right? To be stuck.
You have like real healthcare.
Yeah, but I'm just saying, like, now I've got to go back. I got to get a hotel room again. I've got. You know, you're saying I can't leave.
Well, they let you check in if you have a fever, and are they going to screen you too?
Oh, yeah, that's true. Yeah.
I mean, as long as we're playing this game.
Yeah. I definitely agree with you that it's this weird measure. I don't think it's the right way to do it.
I guess more to the point is it's not sufficient, right? You're going to have a lot of people who are infected without a fever. And so if that's really what you're going at, like, you'll catch half, but not all. And is that good enough to justify the other things that come with it? And you start hearing discussion of walk through medical screens that are similar to the walk through metal detectors, where you go through and it gives like a blood oxidation levels and pulse and all these other things quickly, and in theory can be tied to facial recognition that's tied to either a passport database or something else, and can pull all that information together very quickly of who you are and if you're healthy. Mm-hmm. There's some massive privacy concerns there. That theoretically HIPAA says is no go, but who the hell knows these days anymore? And where in the world are you? Singapore probably doesn't care.
Yeah, they're going to do what they need to do.
Certainly doesn't.
Yeah, yeah. I wonder, you know, what does it look like as we, you know, kind of start the travel back up? You know, now there's a decent number of people traveling, not you know, huge numbers, but people are traveling again. They're starting to. How do you start implementing these things and keeping people informed on what they need? Because if the airlines aren't doing a good job, or the airports aren't doing a good job, or transit's not doing a good job telling people, then it's all useless, right? Because people don't know the rules, so they don't follow the rules. And you've gained nothing. And the other concern is, I think you're right, like asymptomatic cases, it's people who don't have symptoms. It's a big chunk of people who have COVID.
And that's where the mask situation comes into play, I think, a lot.
Yeah.
A lot is a much more significant part of this, of controlling this.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, we're seeing more rapid tests, right? I think so. I think where we will end up is you will end up having to take a test to go through until there's a vaccine. And then there'll be a vaccination check, right? And so, and this is part of why I don't think air travel is going to rebound for a while, right? Because that's going to be a prohibitor for a lot of people.
Is taking the test or getting the vaccine?
Yeah. I mean, because, you know, so the vaccine comes out, how long before it's available to the masses, right? And surely, like we've seen, they're doing this in Vienna, right? The tests aren't cheap.
Yeah. 190 euros.
Yeah. I can't imagine the airlines are going to pay for them. But I'm sure you'll be able to redeem miles for them.
So last subject, Cranky Flyer, Brett Snyder, posted a story from the US DOT, basically posted a letter from the DOT that said, it basically calls out United and says, if they allowed refunds for a 2-hour schedule change when you bought your ticket, they can't change it retroactively. Basically, they're slapping United for their refusal to refund tickets.
Someone filed a formal DOT complaint about that today also.
Why?
There's a formal docket of I bought 6 tickets, you changed my flight, and canceled my flight and rebooked me on a different one, but are just saying it's a schedule change. I want a refund, not a voucher. That one actually is interesting because depending on the full details of the itinerary aren't really listed, and depending on what really happened, it's either a 1-hour or 4-hour change. So it's not a huge like 2 days later or anything like that, like you were dealing with. But you know, if it was only an hour difference. The guy probably doesn't have much of a leg to stand on.
Yeah.
But, it's just interesting to see, you know, he filed the sort of typical DOT quote unquote informal complaint. That's the one most people go through on the webpage and didn't get anywhere. And so in order to, I guess, appeal that, there's a sort of, you can create a new docket, which forces the DOT to respond differently. Although I don't know how, or what it really makes happen. This is the second airline complaint I've seen registered as a docket now in the last couple of weeks. The other one was related to someone who got their credit card account shut down from American. Their Advantage account shut down for too many credit card scams.
I was wondering about some of this because I never actually heard anything back from the DOT, like any kind of,
you almost never do.
Yeah. And then, you know, I heard from United, and I'm still waiting for my actual refund. But I think, you know, like, do you document how long the refund took with the DOT? Like that to me seems like
you can. You are allowed to file an additional complaint saying I was told I would get a refund and it's taking too long.
Okay. Yeah.
The short answer is the DOT complaint system, the informal one, the DOT does not do anything but forward the complaint to the airline to give the airline a chance to resolve it. And if it is not resolved, and I think the airline gets to say whether it was resolved or not, which is kind of bullshit. But if it's not resolved, it counts against them in like their log of complaints filed. And the DOT just reports the airline had X number of complaints. But the number, this, the typical average is 1,500 a month. It's like 25,000.
Wow.
More than an order of magnitude greater this month because airlines have dicked so many people around with these refunds.
But, you know, I would say it's not just United. It's a number of if the European airlines are doing the same thing. I mean, I give them a hard time, but I will give Delta a ton of credit. Last week, I reached out to the Twitter team. They had 2 tickets that they downgraded from first to business, and one of the options they gave me was to refund it. I asked for a refund, and literally 2 days later, I got the Amex notification the refund's hit.
Yeah. JetBlue was playing games also on the cancel, not refunding, only the vouchers. They got a lot of complaints. They got it pulled through. American was not playing nice. I was, I guess, fortunate. I reached out to the Twitter team. I was like, hey, this got screwed up. I had like a ticket, and there's a whole lot of weird ticket numbers problems with mine. But eventually, it's like, this was the PNR. This was the ticket number. Go ahead and refund it. They eventually did. It was a half ticket, so it was a little weird. It had been upgraded one way. But a lot of them were jerks about it. Like, they all tried to hold on to the cash. The European carriers especially are still doing it, although if it was a U.S. point of sale, now they're acknowledging that the U.S. rules apply. But, you know, Canada said, oh, it's okay. Canada just gave a massive bailout to the airlines. They just put together a huge plan. and they're still going to let him hold the money instead of forcing the refunds. So not impressed by that.
Yeah.
Which is surprising because they're generally more pro-consumer than the U.S. is.
Yeah. This is a really weird ruling from Transport Canada.
I think that's it. Anything else you guys want to chat about? Any news that you saw in between the beginning of the show and now?
The SpaceJet 100, the smaller MRJ-90, mm-hmm. has been suspended because of COVID-19, not because no one really wanted to buy it.
Wow. Well,
then you can get tax insurance money.
Yeah, probably not.
Act of God.
There seem to be a whole lot of pandemic clauses that are blocking things from getting claims, especially business continuity stuff.
I'm contemplating buying Flight Simulator so I can feel like what it's like to fly again.
Hey, Flight Sim. Microsoft Flight Sim is going to come out 2020. New one. Soon.
I can send you some of my videos out the window, Foz, if you want. Take off some landings.
I
got a whole channel on YouTube.
I might be there soon.
I slept in my cafe pajamas last night.
I actually slept in my Polaris pajamas last night.
Now, do you have the old Polaris pajamas or the new ones with the big Polaris name on the back?
Both.
I haven't seen
them. What a downgrade that was.
Yeah, I mean, the Kathy pajamas are nice, but they're not as nice as the old ones.
Yeah.
I mean, this is the constant world of cost cutting.
I don't know. I have two quote-unquote requirements, the things I prefer in my pajamas. One is pockets in the pants. So when I'm on the plane, anywhere, but like when I want to put my phone in my pocket when I'm wandering around the plane or whatever, I can do that. And United did this on the first generation of their shirts and has stopped doing it now. But a button so you can attach the napkin.
Yeah.
And both of those went away.
What do the new pajamas look like? I guess I haven't seen these.
They're
like pants and a t-shirt.
Yeah, they're light gray tops with the big United Polaris on the back.
I can send you a picture. I took a selfie in the bathroom the other day. God, how long ago was that? Like 8 months ago.
I'm like, you're taking selfies at home?
No, I was just on an airplane bathroom.
It's getting bad. It's getting bad.
Doesn't count as a Laviator shot when you're on the ground anymore, it turns out. Shit.
That's kind of where I was going with that. I'm like, wow.
Yeah. Denied. I got vetoed by Foz.
Sorry.
No, well deserved.
Oh, man. Well, guys, I think that's a show.
I would like to thank us for talking long enough that I did manage to get my PiWare receiver fixed while we were doing this recording.
I was wondering why you were kind of distance on this show.
Now you know.
To our listeners, leave us a comment. We do like to get feedback and questions from you guys. So, guys and gals, just let us know.
Sometimes we can answer the right ones.
Yeah, sometimes. Occasionally. And we've been talking about maybe doing a live show sometime in the future. Let us know your thoughts on that. We don't know if we're going to do video or what. But, Twitter, @dotslines, moredotsmorelines.com. Leave us a comment. Love to hear from you. Thanks, and happy travels.
Take care.
Bye-bye.